Well, hey, everyone. As we do our culture segment today, we get to welcome back Brad Lominick. Hey, Brad.
Lisa, how are you?
I'm doing pretty well. Good to have you on the show.
I'm glad to be here. I wish I was in studio.
I know. We tend to give people just more time and attention if you're in studio. So sorry, you're just going to get our Plan B show today.
Right.
Yeah. No.
I don't get the hospitality.
No.
I don't get any of the hospitality.
No, you aren't. Right. You are clearly not getting a bottled water from us. I can tell you that, because were you here, you would have one. So you have to provide your own.
I got it right here with me.
Okay, good.
But it's not as good as what I would have there. I know that.
No, it's not. So, well, those of you who know Brad, you probably know him from his years at the helm of Catalyst as president over there. But now he's just like basically an advisor and consultant and all kinds of other stuff. Every one of you that's 21 thinks that you're going to be in the next year.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
And hey, apparently Brad's going to tell us all how to get there, I'm sure, because he's done it for himself. But you are working, I mean, you're doing a ton of stuff right now, largely with Christian leaders and corporate folks. Really, I mean, everything that he's doing, you can find out at Brad Lominick, and that's LOMENICK.com. But give us just a little brief overview of where you are now, Brad, because we just know you from Catalyst.
Yeah, well, I stepped out of officially running Catalyst as the president about a year and a half ago, mm-hmm. a little over a year and a half ago. And that was, that's all a longer story, but basically I'd been in that seat for 10 plus years and just felt like it was time to get out of the way and let some other young leaders step up and also give me the chance to be involved with lots of other initiatives and projects and kingdom opportunities and, you know, I guess in many ways sort of moving on to that next season. And so now my time is pretty consistently divided up between speaking and then consulting and advising with several organizations, also writing this new book and mm-hmm. and getting the chance to be involved in lots of different opportunities. Really, you know, what people say, well, what are you really doing these days? Mm-hmm. Like, well, I think at the end of the day, like my role is a professional friend. That's
yeah.
what I call myself.
Okay.
It's just, I get to be a professional friend to people and show up and basically help other organizations do what they do well and help other leaders be better leaders and lead well.
Well, that is super cool. Well, hopefully you're going to help our audience too, because a lot of folks here
yeah.
are trying to navigate these waters and figure out what does their future look like as they're, you know, trying to work and serve and all of that. So we're going to talk about some principles. The book that Brad referenced is called H3 Leadership, and the three H's, I'm just going to give it away straight off the bat, are humble, hungry, and hustle. Okay, so be humble, stay hungry, always hustle. And exactly. I mean, honestly, do we really need to say anything else? Yes, I guess so.
No, that's it. Just boom. Just boom.
Just boom.
Yeah.
No, hashtag boom.
Hashtag boom. Yeah.
Exactly. So how do you, like, if someone looks at this title, Brad, you know, they could be like either super pumped up, like feeling empowered, or they could be super overwhelmed and be like, oh my goodness, I thought I just went to college and got a degree and now I would just, you know, all of a sudden launch into something successful. And they're like,
right.
Is Brad just telling me to work more or to pound the pavement or to do, you know, but I think you're really talking more about working smarter, not necessarily harder. But why these three things? Why did you come up with these three things to be the subject of the book?
Well, partly because that's been my leadership mantra since really I got out of college.
Mm-hmm.
When people would say, Brad, describe your leadership, that's how I would describe it. And I didn't have a book title in mind when I was sort of describing my leadership. But I would always say, you know, I want to be humble, I want to stay hungry, and I want to always hustle. And I think it's important, especially with these three H's, and obviously these aren't the only pieces of leadership that are important, and this is all undergirded with a spiritual foundation, a walk with Jesus, like the undercurrent of our spiritual life as followers of Jesus is definitely within all of these. But I would say, you know, when you realize it's not about you, which is humility, when you realize that you never stop learning and you should never stop learning and you should always be getting better, which is the hungry part, and then the hustle part is you're willing to work hard and you're willing to stick with it and you're willing to take things to the finish line and you're willing to execute, all those pieces, I think when these line up together, it really does make the kind of leader that I want to be and the kind of leader I want on my team. And here's the important thing, Lisa. Like, I know a lot of leaders who are really humble that have no hustle in them. Mm-hmm. So they realize it's not about them, but they're not doing anything.
Right.
And then I know a lot of leaders who are hustlers, and they're ambitious, and they've moved to the other side of hustle, and they have no humility. Mm-hmm. And so everything's about them, and it's all about, you know, them sort of stepping up to the top of the food chain. And so these have to work in tandem. This is a three-legged stool that has to go together. You can't have just one of the legs. These have to work in partnership. And I really do want to redeem the word hustle. Mm-hmm. I just think culture has taken that word and sort of made it a bad word, especially a lot of Christians. They hear hustle and they go, oh, I don't know if I want to do that. Like, mm-hmm. That doesn't sound right. Like, no, we should hustle. Like, we should be the most ambitious hustlers out there in Jesus' name, right? I mean, that's, mm-hmm. that's part of our calling and our sense of, if we find that sweet spot, then let's go for it. So that's why I really have written this book. And part of it is practical, too, or a big part of it is I just want leadership to be really practical.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Leadership shouldn't be something that we wing it on, and it also shouldn't be something that's so overwhelming that's like, where do I start? I don't even know what that means. I don't really want to be a leader, mm-hmm. Because that feels like something that's the corner office and disconnected from reality. But I think when you say humble, hungry, hustle, it feels like dirty fingernails leadership. It feels like
yeah.
I'm willing to get in the trenches, you know, and like be beside my team and with them and willing to work alongside and not out in front, and I'm not in the corner office with my feet propped up. So
yeah.
That's the kind of leader I want to be, and that's the kind of leaders I want to be around.
Well, I want to take something from each one of these that you outline within the book, and the first one is under the first H, and you basically tell people that we need to know who we are. Now, for the 20-something
right.
who's just starting out, they're probably like, I have no idea what I'm even going to be doing in an hour, let alone knowing who I am. And do I need to just
right.
take multitudinous assessments? Do I need to go into psychotherapy? Do I need to do some meditative like work or whatever? What's the best way for a young adult to kind of move towards this knowledge of identity and purpose?
Well, I think realize that identity is the foundation, mm-hmm. and identity is not what we do. It's who we are. Mm-hmm. And so don't define yourself based on the outcome or the external sort of reality of how your identity gets played out. Identity is just identity. So that's really important. And it's easy to understand that when you're in your 20s, because you haven't necessarily added on building blocks to anything to make it confusing. But when you get to be in your 30s and 40s and 50s, your identity gets really wrapped up in your vocation and your assignment and your job, and sometimes that becomes a real disconnect, and it's discongruent. It ends up allowing you to get off the rails of what it looks like to just be properly self-aware and have an appropriate understanding of self-discovery. And so that's a whole nother conversation, but mm-hmm. identity is foundational. It has to be the place you start. And as believers, our identity is we're followers of Jesus, and that is the most important identity that we can all sort of rest in and have as a foundation. And the reason it's so important to me is that, you know, like as the Catalyst guy for many years, mm-hmm. When I stepped out of running Catalyst, I had to have somewhat of an identity crisis moment and just that sense of what's going to happen now that I'm not the Catalyst guy. Is anybody really going to care about me anymore? Like, mm-hmm. Will people still want to talk to me, and who am I really?
Mm-hmm.
And I had to wrestle with this, and you know, it reminded me of how important a habit of identity is. So make sure you understand that identity is not, again, it's not what you do.
Mm-hmm.
And we very quickly will sort of settle for, oh, like you're the Catalyst guy, or Lisa, you're the Boundless lady.
Mm-hmm.
And okay, that's part of who I am, but it's not the full definition of who I am.
Yeah. Well, that's actually a good segue into the next point I want to bring up under the hungry section of the book. And you tell us to love what we do. And, you know, how do we parse that out from, like, say there is a 20-something listening who's like, well, you know what, I would really love what I did if I was leader of Catalyst, or I would, how do we love what we do right where we are, but also be realistic, you know, the fact that we will have to maybe earn some stripes, we will have to put into action that hustle in the third part, you know, we will have to kind of do some of the dirty work before we really find our true niche.
Well, I think passion, you know, like having that sense of loving what you do and the passion for it every single day. There's most people in life, the place they find themselves many times is not the full extension of the 100% of their passion point. Mm-hmm. And that's just a reality. So part of it is understanding that most of us don't have an environment or an existence, especially with our job or our assignment for this season, that fully connects to all outlets, and you know, the all eight cylinders of the engine are running full on passion. Mm-hmm. With what we're doing, and that's okay. Like, we just have to be okay with that. But it doesn't mean that we don't walk into what we're doing every day and force ourselves to love what we do in many ways. And you don't have to fake that, but you also have to show up and be willing to sort of put on that face of, you know what, I'm going to be passionate about whatever I'm assigned to today. And here's the reason, is because the faithfulness of being connected to what I'm doing right now and living that out and doing it well and showing up with an attitude and a posture that says I'm in is part of our scorecard of success. Mm-hmm. And so many of us, we look at the other side and we go, well, like you said, if I only was running Catalyst, or if I was only like out speaking, or if I was only running this nonprofit that I want to launch, you know, in the next 3 or 4 years, then I would be really happy. And that may be true. You would probably be happier, but it doesn't mean you can't necessarily love what you do now. And so many of us, we think, well, I'll get by with doing this thing so I can pursue my passions outside of the 9-to-5 world. And while that's an okay reality, I would say, one, be smart about it, but two, if you can go pursue that thing that you're really passionate about, then go pursue it. Now, again, don't say, well, Lominick said to, like, just jump. And I'm not saying be stupid and jump. Mm-hmm. Like, there's dumb jump, mm-hmm. which is you jump in and you're like, well, I really love this, but I'm now, like, bankrupt. That's not smart.
Yeah.
But if things line up well and you're able to, then go ahead and jump. And the beauty of the current reality of today in our culture and just the world we live in, there's more opportunities for 20-somethings to pursue things they love, they really, really, truly love and feel like they're their sweet spot more than ever before.
Yeah.
And it also has the potential to depress you, and you're 28 and you realize, well, I didn't get to go start that nonprofit social innovation company at 26. So now I'm depressed, and I'm just going to go home and live in my parents' basement. Mm-hmm. That's not appropriate either.
Yeah.
It may just be that you need to go work at Starbucks, and again, like, build back that level of competency and capability and passion by just finding something to pursue right now.
Yeah.
So that, again, longer conversation, but that's a little bit of insight into that idea.
It's interesting you say that, because I remember my sister telling me once, it must be fabulous to have a job where all you do is talk to interesting people all day. And I remember telling her, well, actually, hosting the show is like 3 hours of my week.
Right,
if you sat
exactly.
with me for the rest of my week, you would be in meetings, you would be answering emails, you would be putting out fires, you would be trying to figure out how we're going to accomplish this with this amount of budget. So I think, a realistic picture is helpful for anyone, even someone who's a little bit further along in their career, to realize, it's not all just, you know, roses and amazing experiences.
Yeah, and you may, you know, again, for those who are listening to this and going, there, it's hard for me to find anything I really enjoy with my current reality, mm-hmm. in my job, let's say. You know what? Like, figure one thing out. If it's that bad, then get out. But there's got to be one thing that you can look at and go, you know what? Like, I could get really excited about doing that. And if you're excited about it and it's potentially something you could work on, go to your boss and say, hey, you know what? I would really love to be able to work on that project. That just seems like something I would have a huge connection to. Mm-hmm. Is there any possible way I could do that? And most bosses, most people in positions of authority would go, let's figure that out. Like, let's find a way for you to connect to more passion points within the realm of this job you have. There's no bosses I know, at least there's very few, that their whole goal in life is to make your life miserable. Like I just don't know very many people in places of management or leadership that would have that kind of perspective on holding you down. So you also have to.
I'm sometimes like that, Brad. I'm sometimes like that, but it just it depends on the day. Let's be honest.
I mean, I was going to say there might be an asterisk next to your name.
Exactly.
So, yeah. But you have to be intentional as that person who's on the team. You have to be intentional about, you know, saying, "Hey, I need to. I don't need to wait on my boss to give me the dream job. Like, figure it out on your own. Like, have some intentionality about pursuing those things in your life. And, you know, if we're intentional about something, typically it will happen way sooner."
Sure. Well, to that point, you know, in the final section of the book, you actually mention the idea of committing to completion. And also talk to the young adult about this, because first of all, they're blasted for being so fickle and so entitled and so whatever that they can't even stick with anything. But then where's the value in also taking that next opportunity and realizing, in fact, I was just talking to a job coach who said that most of your, you know, career capital is going to be gained in that first decade and a half of your career, as far as growth that you do and all that. So how do you look for opportunities, jump on something great without being a complete flake about it?
Well, I would say this, like you're the number one way that you gain credibility to get that next thing is by doing the current thing really well. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have that kind of perspective that says, I understand that I got to kill it in the now. Like, I've got to crush it in whatever assignment I've been given. And if you're stewarding that assignment, that is the most important assignment you have right now. And if you'll crush that current assignment, you will get more opportunities. This is the hard thing for a lot of young leaders today to understand, because they look at the sky as limitless. And it's, you know what, like, I can jump, I can go be free agent, I can go be a consultant, I can, like, you know, start my own thing. And you can, that is true. And that's an opportunity that sets in front of you. But most of us, again, we're going to live in the environment that says the steady plodding of just crushing it every day and doing our job really well and getting things done, making things happen, is the way that we're going to get to the next level and keep growing and gaining influence. And I'm convinced, at least for the teams that I've led and the people around me, somebody who makes things happen for me is by far the most important person on the team. Mm-hmm. And I will give them way more opportunities and responsibility, and I will give them a raving endorsement if they move on and they want to go find something else to do. Because that is, I just know there's so many people out there who are idea people. Mm-hmm. We got too many idea people. We got too many conceptors, ideators, visionaries, mm-hmm. and that's all really important.
Yeah.
But I'm telling you, like, you don't have to have any talent. This is good news. Like, this is good news for all of us. It doesn't take talent to be somebody who's committed to get things done.
Yeah.
It takes hustle. It takes grit. Mm-hmm. It takes grind. It takes hard work. You know, so we can all do that. Like, we don't have to have many letters and symbols behind our name, and we don't have to have the fancy title to be somebody who makes it happen.
Yeah.
So if you're willing to do that, you are going to be really important.
Yeah. So talk to us then in this context about the word innovation, because you talk about this in the book, and I think a lot of times it's thrown around to indicate change. And to me, it just is like mind boggling. It's crazy making to me, because I'm like, what, you know, oh my gosh, innovation, what am I innovating? What if I look back on my, you know, performance this past year, was I a change maker? Was I, you know, all these buzzwords and stuff. And how, you know, I'm sure you're not encouraging change for change's sake. So what are some guidelines for pursuing innovation, being creative, and really devoting some time to actually creative thinking in the midst of all the hustle and getting things done?
Well, innovation is not, there's a sense among all of us that innovation is like this white wall that's a whiteboard, and it means that we just draw something amazingly cool on it.
Yeah.
And everybody goes, oh my gosh, that is just amazing. That's like the next brand that you know, that Google's going to want to partner with.
I just think it's like Steve Jobs, and I'm not him. So what do I have to offer?
Exactly. Right.
Yeah.
Right. So you're not Apple. So you basically are not an innovator, and you're not a change maker.
Right.
This is such the false reality of the world we live in. And everybody's creative. Everybody has to be creative, and everybody has to be innovative, because at the end of the day, innovation is about solving problems. Like, it's more about that you're coming up with different solutions to maybe the same problem you've been dealing with for a long time. Mm-hmm. So it's not about being artistic, although that's part of it. It's not about necessarily being a hipster, although that may be part of it. It's not about necessarily reading Fast Company and, you know, looking at cool websites, although that might be part of it. It's about saying there's a problem that we want to try to solve, and we've got to come up with a different way to go after it. And so all of us have to be innovative. You know, like, if you're a father or a mother, you come up with innovative ways to make your child stop crying, mm-hmm. or to make your child behave. You know, if you're a neighbor, you come up with innovative ways to keep that dog from barking all night long and keeping you up. But we would never think, oh, I'm an innovator because I figured out how to do that. But that's truly what it is at its core, is being able to solve problems with different types of solutions than the ones we pursued before. So if we think about it that way, then all of us are supposed to be innovators. And most of the time, innovation is based on a process, and it's based on discipline. Mm-hmm. And if you'll put process and discipline into your cycle and your schedule and your system and your routine, then you'll start to see creativity emerge. You'll start to see innovation happen. You'll start to see change that's good. And most of us don't want to deal with change, because change feels like it's something we should be scared of, and it's fearful, and I don't want to change because I like the way I am right now. But if you don't change, you die. Mm-hmm. If you don't change, you quit growing. You know, you lose a sense of health. Healthy things grow because they change. And so anyway, we've got to take all the asterisks off of innovation and look at it and go, you know what, I can go after this. Everybody can. Everybody can pursue being a leader who's innovative.
Sure. Okay. So final question here. You actually talk in the book about loving lists. You love writing lists. Yeah. You love keeping up with them. How can a young adult, because there are a lot in our audience here that are going to be like, oh, lists, they're like super lame. I'm sure I should be able to do things off the top of my head. Lists aren't sexy, you know, whatever. How can a young adult maximize the use of lists to really accomplish these three H's as they're pursuing life and effectiveness in their work and beyond?
Well, if anybody comes to a meeting with me and they don't have something to write on, I basically tell them to leave and come back with something to write on.
Okay.
That could be your phone.
Yeah.
But I would prefer it's something you're actually writing down, because you'll actually remember stuff when you write it down, mm-hmm. the actual practice of writing something down. But regardless, if you think you can remember everything on your list, you are totally in fantasy hopa-hopa land. Like, okay. You're just living in a false reality of society. And I don't care who you are, if you may be the memorization champion, mm-hmm. but you're taking up parts of your brain that you shouldn't be taking up. So the reason lists really work and they're effective is because it frees up your brain and the rest of your mind and your soul to be able to think on things that need the most attention, versus trying to remember what three things was I supposed to do today, and gosh, I forgot to write those down. And I mean, just you're actually helping yourself be more effective if you create lists. Now, there are those of us who love lists, like me, and those of us who despise them. But part of your reality as a leader, and if you want, again, you want to grow, you want to gain credibility, you want to go up the ladder of influence, is write things down. Like, figure out your system that works best for you. And we've never been in a place before, ever, in the history of mankind, where there's more apps and ease of use of things, of technology, that allow us to keep a list that's actually helpful for us. Mm-hmm. So figure out your system and then use it really well. Evernote is a great one. Like, we just don't have any more excuses of, well, gosh, I forgot my pen and pencil. Well, shut up. I mean, like, grow up and find something to take a list, because it will allow you to be more effective. And, you know, this is the goal of everything. Like, this book, all the idea of humble, hungry, hustle, it's how do I be a more effective leader?
Right.
And being a list taker and a list maker makes you more effective.
Yeah. Well, and I just want to be the poster child for the super uncool people that still just write on, like, legal pads.
Yeah, come on, yellow legal pads.
I have... I'm all over it. I have team members that are like using Basecamp and using all these like apps and stuff like that. And I use stuff on my phone as well, but I just love going into a meeting with a plain like lined piece of paper, and I love crossing stuff off. And so people, if you love that, you just own it and you say Lisa Anderson does it and I can do it too. So
run with it. Run with your yellow legal pad. I mean, put that phone on your belt and like wear your sandals. You 50-year-old man who's wearing socks with your sandals, put that phone in your belt, have that Bluetooth in your ear and just work your system.
Yeah. Yeah. That sounded like something New Testament, like take up your cloak and tuck it in your tunic when you run after the prodigal or something. Yeah. Okay, that's good.
Well, it's actually an updated version of the breastplate of righteousness.
Good.
And
That's awesome. Well, cool. Brad, thanks so much for being part of this conversation. Folks, the book is H3 Leadership, Be Humble, Stay Hungry, and Always Hustle. So great principles from Brad, who has been there, who is there, living it, does a ton of mentorship and training of leaders. So listen up. Again, you can find out more about him and what he has going on at bradlominick.com. Brad, thanks so much for being part of the conversation.
Thanks, Lisa. You're awesome. Keep up the great work.